The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Professor Gary Murphy, who is Professor of Politics at DCU, is sitting opposite me. We were talking earlier on to Sean Defoe about the political campaign kicking off for the next 3 weeks. And we sort of take for granted that political campaigning consists of running from chip shop to Pamela Scott, which I believe is a clothing shop, all the way around the country for 3 weeks and then it all ends. Was it ever thus? Is it more now this kind of cult of personality stuff like the States, or is it individual constituency battles that matter?
A little bit of both, I think, Anton. Way back in 77, Jack Lynch had a kind of a battle bus. He was the first person to have a battle bus. And he hopped on his bus and they drove around every highway and byway in the state. And he won a massive overall majority, too much, 20 seats, which then, of course, he was sniped at by backbenchers forevermore. And how he took over in 79.
God,
and
imagine the problem of too big a majority.
Too big a majority, 20 seats. Bertie Ahern, the legendary campaigner himself, and we can talk about him. He was a backbencher. That was his first election. And he often complained afterwards that Jack Lynch would walk past him in the corridors of Leinster House without even saying hello and barely knowing who he was. And that was the problem in all these backbenchers. And Lynch had his own coterie of people like Holly and the like. And it all went a bit pear-shaped. But that was the first real big sort of nationwide campaign.
And what was the genesis of that kind of thing? Was it to copy the American approach? Was it? Because, I mean, there was a big talk about Saatchi & Saatchi rebranding Thatcher in her early years in that the sense that we copied that.
Yeah, that was in 79, of course, and they had a famous, the most famous poster of all time, Labour Isn't Working. You'll remember it with the big long queues because I think unemployment had reached over 3 million in the UK. But 76, Fianna Fáil had a look at the Democrats with Jimmy Carter. A leader for a change was his great slogan in 76 when he beat the incumbent Gerald Ford. And Seamus Brennan, who was whose son is running now, I think, in Dublin, Rathdown, he was a very young general secretary and he went to the States to have a look at how they campaigned there. And the rallying around the leader, we saw with Fianna Fáil with Bertie Ahern, and I think we're clearly going to see it with Fine Gael and Simon Harris now in the 3 weeks. And the campaign, thankfully, is short because it seems to have been going on forever up to now, Anton.
And I suppose the Carter original design was a way to give grist to the media mill, because the boys on the bus, the reporters stayed embedded with the campaign, and the objective was to create something every day that they could then write up.
Yeah, and this was, of course, the days of traditional media, with where leaks were very important, and people wanted to embed themselves in the campaign. Which, of course, as you would know, came kind of a decade earlier when journalists embedded themselves in Vietnam in the during the war with the American commanders. So, with we and the British in 79 onwards, we have now this sort of mix between constituencies are very important, and there's been a lot of talk about Fine Gael struggling because they're losing half their seats, unparalleled in the losing half their incumbents, unparalleled in the history of campaigning here in Ireland, and then the sort of the macro, I am your leader in waiting. And we heard it yesterday, the Taoiseach wants a mandate, Micheál Martin wants to lead the next government, and Mary Lou MacDonald also wants a mandate to turf the two aforementioned out.
Now, you talked about Bertie Ahern and the capacity to campaign. What makes a good campaigner in that style where you are constantly on the go, working through shoe leather, racing up and down villages? And who was the best at it? Was he?
Well, he was very good at it. You need an empathy with people and you need to be able to talk their language. And I think this was something that Leo Varadkar struggled with, to be frank, on the 2020 campaign. And so Bertie was great because he could talk hurling in Cork. He could talk farming in Carlow. He could talk, you know, the weather in the west of Ireland. I remember in 2002, he was like a different physical figure on the campaign trail. You might say he wouldn't be the most natural person, but he was transformed. I remember being with him on one of the days, just as an observer, and literally the physical transformation in the man was extraordinary. He'd go at this enormous pace and people would be flocking to see him. You can't quite imagine it now with the fragmentation of our politics after the crash. But in that same campaign, remember Michael Noonan got a belt of a custard pie over, I think, in Roscommon. And it was the famous time, you mentioned this to me earlier, where Charlie McCreevy said it was the first time the opposition were voted out of office because Bertie nearly got an overall majority. But then somebody like even Micheál Martin, who'd been been a very important figure, of course, and you'll probably get your claws into him at some stage, I'm sure. In 2011, people thought Fianna Fáil might collapse to like within 5 or 6 seats, and he actually proved very strong on the campaign, and particularly in debates. And I think whatever about the wandering around the highways and byways, I mean, social media is very important, particularly for young people. But I think debates are going to be really important.
Well, before we get to debates, go back to the custard pie. What about the uncontrollability of that kind of campaigning? Because we saw the J.D. Vance. Now, it didn't do him any harm in there, as we saw.
Yeah.
But J.D. Vance attempting to buy a donut being one of the most uncomfortable things in modern history. What about that? The risk that somebody custard pies you, the risk that you... Do you remember Gordon Brown had that... What was it, that contemptible woman? Do you remember that?
He said, wasn't there afterwards? He said, who put that woman in my way? And she had accused him of some terrible travesty.
Correct. And of course, all the mics were there when it happened.
Completely.
How do you prevent
that? John Prescott gave a guy a punch on the campaign trail.
Following an egg, wasn't it?
Yeah, in the same... and he said, I'm not going to stand around and have me belted by eggs. So he was the big bruiser of Labour.
That worked in his favour, though, didn't it? There was a sort of a sense of fair play to Prescott.
I wouldn't stand for it. So why should I expect my political representatives to stand? So, the political parties were trying to control the sort of, where they're going. Can they get a nice welcome? But you're in a supermarket in, you know, Douglas and Cork City. You know, if you're Micheál Martin, you're probably okay. But you never know. And it just takes one, well, you might call them a crank or one concerned citizen to say, you know, and I could well imagine it with the Taoiseach, someone with a child with scoliosis to say, you promised you would fix this a decade ago and here we are in our difficulties. And then it all can just spin out of control. And no matter, and that word spin is important, no matter then what your handlers try to do, you know, it's on your show, it's on the 6-1 News, whatever. And, you know, difficulties then can just spiral out of control.
Now, when you're planning for that kind of campaign, is the objective that you have an impact in the town or village, or that you use the town or village for media coverage, which actually matters? Is it the direct face-to-face campaigning, or is it the secondary received media coverage?
I think in our 43 constituency battle, being on the ground does matter. I do think that is the case. Bertie certainly taught that. And that's why he went to literally every constituency in the state, as I understand both all three leaders intend to do in the course of this 3 weeks. Well, while short, nevertheless is, you know, 20 sleeps. So it's long enough. And people do like to be that they're not, their vote isn't being taken for granted, and they do want to meet political leaders. And people are, for the most part, people aren't terribly interested in politics in their daily lives. But during campaigns, my experience, and I've been, you know, commenting on media on election campaigns for, you know, a good couple of decades now, but people do like to see their leaders and to, you know, to ask them, to question them, what are you going to do for my area? I mean, it was a big issue in the locals, but it's becomes just much more sort of important at general election, Anton. So, and remember, we are in 43 constituencies with 43 battles. I mean, without getting into the intricacies of transfers, but like you come a fourth or a fifth seat in any of the big constituencies, and you just don't know how those transfers might fall. So it's a bit, well, the great beauty of Irish elections, it can all be a bit unknowable.
You talked a little bit about traditional media back in the Carter days and before. There's a fabulous piece of work by a man called Peter Hamby, who's now the head of news at Snapchat, but he spent time in Harvard, and he wrote this piece called "Did Twitter Kill the Boys in the Bus?" where he says that the pressure to file on a rolling basis all day is radically different than it used to be, because it used to be that the political correspondents could take 8 hours watching the candidate and then have a reflective, considered piece submitted at the end of that. Are those days gone? Is it all churn now? Or does the campaign give the political correspondent insight and understanding they wouldn't already have?
I mean, probably gives them a little bit of insight, but the churn, as you said, and I didn't know you could have a head of news at Snapchat.
So yeah, you wouldn't think to, really.
Interesting. But it's... yeah, I mean, the constant demand to have something up and to have something up before your rivals is, I think, has changed the sort of nature of how campaigns work. And the correspondents are always looking for a bit of a nugget even before they go on the campaign trail from their sources within the big party. So we're only always willing to give it as well, because they want to get their own message out first. So in one way, I kind of yearn for the old days and the old consistency, and then people would ring long reflective pieces like myself on the Sunday newspapers. But I do worry that those are gone. But maybe it's not. Maybe that isn't a bad thing. But I do think there's still an excitement sentiment about elections that grabs the sort of zeitgeist like nothing else.
What then about the debate? Because there used to be a sort of a universal truth, which was that debates got an awful lot of attention but weren't significantly consequential. And then Joe Biden took on Donald Trump and proved that debates can be massively consequential. So what of our one?
Well, Fianna Fáil were certainly of the view that in 2007, when the kind of campaign changed in the last week, that their man, Bertie, had beaten Enda Kenny and beaten him decisively in the RTE one-on-one debate. The great debates were Haughey and Fitzgerald in the 80s. They were kind of always fought to a draw, and our politics was much more predictable then. Micheál Martin, the aforementioned, he did actually, I thought, quite well in the 2011 debates when Fianna Fáil were on the floor and like we were... People were talking about the demise of the once great, the great party. But yeah, in 2020, Mary Lou MacDonald almost by dint of personality forced her way on to the RTE debate. They were going to have Micheál and Leo, which I don't think anyone would have tuned in for. And then suddenly it was Mary Lou on television saying Tweedledum and Tweedledum.
But that's one of those
and that's
where...
That's going to happen, I think, almost inevitably again. But, because, sorry, just to finish the point, Anton, you have Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael wanting to be back in power with each other. That's the obvious thing. And then you have Mary Lou saying, get these guys out.
You know the Samuel Johnson line about dogs in the hind legs and female preachers? It is that it is done, not that it's done well. The fact of Mary Lou MacDonald being in the debate was the significant thing. I would argue at that point that the fact that she was now on parity with those two, does that still have the same heft this time, or does she have to go in and beat the other two? Two on one, effectively.
Yeah, no, I agree completely that just having her on the stage, where she did perform very effectively, I remember, was the important thing then. I would just turn it on its head, but I think it's a difficulty for Micheál Martin and Simon Harris when they're faced with a person who says, these two have run the state for 100 years, and we saw it yesterday at the launch of Sinn Féin, but also People Before Profit. Get these guys out who have been in charge of the state and making games of it for 100 years. Now, that's obviously a matter of opinion. But Mary Lou MacDonald, I think, is in a good position in relation to the debates, because she can say, I am the change agent. But you've got to perform. I mean, there's no point being on, you know, in studios like this or on RT in debates or whatever, Virgin, and not being able to come up with a decent reason why we should give you our vote. And that's the great sort of unknowable. We have an extraordinary fragmentation in Ireland since the economic crash. The old stabilities are gone. There are very few people in political parties. I sometimes tell my students, I show them a graph to say party loyalty. Something like about 60% of people would, you know, you could go to Ballardreed and you say, that's a Fianna Fáil house or that's a Fine Gael house. There's very little of that now. So party loyalty, I'm attached to Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, People Before Profit, whoever. That's kind of gone. And that makes it, I think, far more interesting. And we saw changes, significant changes in the first week of the campaign last year in the polls. So I'll be certainly watching out in the first week. Will the first week of the campaign where the sort of momentum builds, will that make a difference? I think Sinn Féin will be hoping certainly that they can up their poll numbers a couple of points.
Can you expand a little on that thing of party loyalty? Because obviously we don't have the same system as the states where you register so that you can be part of the primaries for a party. But if you look at the recent US election, I think it was to the order of 96% of Republicans voted Republican and 96% of Democrat. I mean, absolute down the line binary position depending on party loyalty. How do we stand on party loyalty? Are there still core Fine Gael voters, core Sinn Féin voters, or is it all up for grabs?
The word binary you used is the important point, because in the United States, like, it's one or the other. There are a few. There's a Green candidate, Jill Stein, and there was a socialist candidate, believe it or not, a couple of libertarians. But in reality, it's Democrat or Republican. It's different here. Fianna Fáil lost 500,000 votes between 2007 and 2011. They went from 838,000 down to 350,000. But they still had 350,000 people to vote for them after the worst crash in the history of the state. And when we lost our sovereignty, you could say, with the Troika. So you'd have to say there is some loyalty there still. They won two seats in only two constituencies. Cork South Central, Micheál McGrath and Micheál Martin and Laois Offaly. And you'd have to consider that there still is some attachment, some traditional attachment. I remember I once gave a talk to a Fianna Fáil coming in in DCU when my hockey book came out. I mean, there was four people at it and I was one of them. So, and I think the guy who organised it, his girlfriend was there and didn't want to be there. My point being that, you know, there is very little now attachment to young people in particular to political party. Yeah, we have branches in all the universities, but they're few and far between, and I'm not sure they're there for political reasons. So I think that would give you some idea of the sort of the move away from joining political parties. Years ago, you say Ireland was known for three things: the GAA, the Catholic Church, Fianna Fáil, and the Fine Gaelers would rail against this. But you know, those days are certainly like with De Valera long gone.
Gary, thank you very much, Professor Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics at DCU.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.